At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. You're listening to All Ball, where we have great long-form conversations about people's lifespan within basketball. Plus, I offer up some commentary as well. Here's what I want to do for the next couple All Balls. I'm going to put it out on social media, Twitter, IG, Facebook. If there's a question you have, we'll answer it. We're going to start pumping out these a bit more often now in the college basketball season in the 3 to 4 a week variety. And we hope that as you get to the holiday season, this is something that you share with a friend. My conversation today is with Steve Lapis. Now, part of it is this is how schedules work and this is how people's stories work. But Lapis is a dear friend of mine. He's an unbelievable guy. He's a guy's guy. I mean, just a good hang, loves ball, likes to play golf. Like, I love him as a guy. Anyway, so last year we had him. We had what we called part one, but I think we cut it up into two parts or three parts, whatever, where he told his backstory, you know, where his dad ran a flower shop and had no idea or understanding of his love, desire for this game called basketball, and how he ultimately made it to being head coach in Manhattan. We pick up there where now he's the head coach at Villanova. How he got the Villanova job, what it was like, losing that job. And was he actually fired? How did the did he resign? What happened? It's all in here. So we got, I think, two parts for this. Before we get to my conversation with Steve Lapis, give me a couple of college basketball thoughts now that we have basically a month under our belt, right? And weird year where you have so many teams jumping up and winning these guaranteed games. And in years past, you might have, you know, 5, 10, where it feels like if you have the six biggest conferences in the country, half the teams have lost a guaranteed game. It's crazy, right? So what's behind that? I think there's a lot to it. I mean, obviously, the transfer portal changes things. Players have always transferred. But now you do get guys who later in their career find themselves in the, do I want to stay, be a bench player, fight to be one of the guys that get their name called, or play meaningful minutes? And I think that's what you have. Additionally, and this is, AAU coaching is not perfect. It doesn't set you up perfectly for high school or collegiate success because there are a lot of things that are different about it. Much deeper, thorough level of preparation, of execution, and of coaching when you're coaching on an actual team. That said, I do believe that if you've coached AAU basketball at a high level, you know this to be true. Oftentimes when you add talented players, more talented players than ones you have, and you put together, and you know, on a Saturday is pool play, Sunday is bracket play, Saturday is a mess. You're trying to figure out who you play, how you play them together, what can you run. Not every great player plays well with another great player. Not every good player plays well with another good player, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the micro. And the macro, that's what happens in college basketball. You know, you have a base of guys you're bringing back from last year. And let's be honest, they're coming back for another year. Some because they like their role, most because they believe their role will expand by coming back. They're not good enough to play in the NBA, although don't tell them that. It's just they haven't been given the role where they can show how good they're playing in the NBA. So when you add new pieces, it takes a while. It takes a while for the coaches. It takes a while for the players kind of figure it out. And you're not going to be as good as you ultimately will be once you figure it out. Once you figure it out. Because just like players, you know, you have to have players only have one agenda. And oftentimes, sometimes you can start the season that way, and then you get to this part of the year, and it's not. But by the time you get to usually late January, February, that's where, you know, it's just about winning and about getting in the tournament, about trying to win the tournament, win your league, et cetera, et cetera. The point is that December basketball, generally, I mean, the way I've always approached every game is to win, right? What gives you the best chance to win? But I mean, even with that mentality, if you're coaching an AAU team, you got to keep everybody in the team. You're going to have to play some guys a little bit more, even on Saturdays than you would on Sundays. So I think that's my hypothesis on why there's been so many guaranteed game wins. I think a lot of these high major teams also, maybe their top end isn't as good as it used to be. And the mid majors and low end majors, maybe better than it used to be. I'm not sure. But that's the hypothesis. I was actually really impressed with Texas in their loss to Illinois. Obviously impressed with Illinois. The Epps kid's going to be fantastic. But learning how to finish off an opponent is definitely a taught and learned skill. And I don't think Texas necessarily has it yet. They struggled to put away Creighton a week ago as Shireman hit three late threes and that thing became a ball game. And they had Illinois down eight. It's one of the interesting parts that as we go on this season, interview people, if you've noticed, Virginia, for example, doesn't run blocker mover. They don't run motion nearly as much, hardly at all. They run some ball screen continuity. They run some other stuff. Don't get me wrong. Tony had to kind of evolve with the times. Texas, a little bit more traditional kind of motion. The problem with letting guys play is you can't necessarily determine where the shots come from. It's always been my issue with motion basketball. It's the hard to stop because you can't really scout it because a really good motion team, they just read what you do and they do the opposite. And that pure five-man motion is beautiful basketball. But again, the problem with it is you can't, as a coach, determine where the specific shots come from. And oftentimes, a good defensive team can make your worst shooter shoot a ball at a spot where you don't want him to shoot because they just leave him open and dare him, right? And they load up on your best players. So the point is, I do think that one of the flaws, if not the biggest and maybe only flaw, the true motion basketball, in addition to the fact it's not taught at a lower level and so it takes a while for guys to truly learn it, is that it doesn't allow for the coach to really determine who he wants shooting the ball in what late game situations. And I think Texas, to a certain extent, they suffered from that. You know, they were one possession away from putting that game away, and they could not. Some of that speaks to Illinois. You know, I thought for Texas, Carr drove in the lane on the last possession of regulation when they got the ball with 7 seconds and change to go. He had Serge Ibaka open on a wing and chose instead to play hero ball. Like, again, some of that has nothing to do with your ball in a set. It's just guys to get over themselves and find the open man. But I do think there's a portion of some of these teams, the best teams put you away. They put you away. They just know it's, and I understand you're sitting there going like, well, what about NBA teams? There's such a high volume of 3-point shots, of possessions, of talent, that yes, in the fourth quarter, most NBA games become tied. But then the better team usually puts the other team away. What I'm talking about is if that game is 8, you get it to 10 or 12, and it's over. If it's 16, you get to 20, it's over. And Texas did not show the ability yet to do it. I'm going to get Danny Hurley on the pod. I'm going to get Bobby Hurley on the pod, not get them together. But I want to – this is a great way to show who's listening, because somebody's going to tell this story before I have them or Kevin Willard on. Like, I love what Danny's going to do to the Big East. He's going to march through the Big East with both middle fingers blazing and stomp on that league. I played against Danny. I think it was his junior year at Dean Hall. That was my freshman year at Notre Dame. And he was a really good, solid point guard. Obviously, when your brother is one of the greatest point guards in the history of the sport, that's a hard shadow to overcome. But the shit he used to endure every game, obviously made him who he is today. You know, the constant chance of Bobby's better, other brother, you know, and we don't know you. And then you'd have, like, our guy, we weren't good enough to talk shit to Danny. But I know other guys did. You know, you talk shit about him because his brother's better or whatever. And Danny is a super competitive guy. What's crazy is, like, he was a really, really good player. But his brother was, like, an all-time great. So it ends up making him look like he was some schlub when he wasn't a schlub. He was a really good player. I played against him. He was a bitch. He was so hard to play against, bitch in a very good connotation. But I love the march through the Big East. You know, all those places that gave him shit. And I know the league's different now and people forget. I guarantee Danny had no way as he that. The other guy who I want to get on is Kevin Willard. And Kevin's got that thing going at Maryland. And Maryland's a they don't really fit the Big Ten. There's a nastiness to Maryland fans because so many of them are these, you know, northeastern suburb kids, and all they know as fans is to be assholes. Right? They're much more in the Syracuse variety. They're much more in the, like, you pick the northeastern fan base, like, their fans are, is it collegial? Yeah, but there's a lot, like, the reason they were chanting "fuck you, JJ" back in the day was that's who Maryland fans are, right? They just are. For whatever reason, there's just a different edge to them than there are most in the Big Ten. Now, I do know that Indiana, I've been told by a lot of Indiana people, that fan base has an edge now because they've been beaten down for so long after so much success that the new wave of students and fans, they're a lot edgier. I also would tell you, like, that the barstoolization of so many of these fan bases, you know, and, you know, Barstool is obviously super successful, but what is it? It's, you know, it's kind of stoking the fire of the shit talking fan. Right? That's what it is. It's we can say anything and do anything, whatever. Well, this, I think, first happened with message boards. It's kind of that same sort of guy. And they get off on saying, on some levels, vile stuff that is humorous and 20 years ago probably wasn't pushing the envelope of good taste, but it's not really in good taste. And I think Maryland has that sort of group of fam. I know that it wore out Mark Turgeon. No matter what you did, they weren't happy with it unless you not just won, but you killed. It's a different mentality. It does not fit the Big Ten. But when it's going good, like, that place is a fucking snake pit. So part of me, and so when you hear me talk about it, part of me is like, oh, that means he hates Maryland. Like, no, it just is what it is, right? There are just certain places that the fans are nastier. You know, it's like, I remember, I say this all the time about Nebraska. Like, they're so nice to you in Nebraska. You honestly think, like, they're stealing your wallet. They're so nice. Even at Creighton, where they have an incredible fan base, or, you know, I remember we were playing Nebraska. This is early February of 1999. God damn it. So we're warming up, and we had lost to Creighton that year. And Creighton wasn't great. But we'd also lost to Florida Atlantic. Twins lost to Florida Atlantic. They would read our preseason prognostication and quotes, and like they had planned this. They were waiting for us, but they were the nicest dudes ever, right? Like you could look at them and they'd start laughing. Whereas when you play in the Northeast and you play at some of these places, like they're just mean, and there's no back and forth, there's no human interaction. There's no, that was a good one. That's funny. Anyway, the Kevin Willard part that I want to tell is, I want him to tell the story. You know, he had a year left of eligibility at Pittsburgh, and he decided not to play and went to work for Rick Pitino and the Celtics when his dad was with the Celtics, you know? So, I mean, just think about that for a second on that. If you're a college basketball player, who's a starting point guard at Pitt, and look, Pitt was a tough one, right? You had, at the time, you had Montego Cummings. When he was the other point guard, he was like the second or third point guard. They had Ice McCullough, Jerry McCullough, who was filthy. He was so good. And he would come into the game and like he'd get mercifully booed. It's one thing to boo a kid or to jeer a kid when he's on the road, but it would happen at home at Pittsburgh. It was disgraceful. Simply because he's the coach's son. Kevin was a good player, man. But I wonder, as those guys coach now, how much of that is part of what's made them, how much of that is still in their minds, how much of that makes them want to go into arenas and win the game and then drop a big FU to anybody and everybody who, I mean, especially for Kevin to go to Pittsburgh, how they treat him. Like, his dad's a wonderful dude. Kevin is an amazing guy. Really, like, I would love to tell you, like, nah, he's really a jerk. He's not. He's an incredibly balanced guy. And I think he's a really good coach. But I do wonder how those guys process those things and how it has shaped them or hasn't shaped them. Or do they even remember? All right, that's enough rambling. Let's get to part two, and there'll be part three. This is Steve Lapis. So when we last talked with Lap, okay, he was really successful in Manhattan. Remember, he had been a longtime assistant. He had been assistant for 4 years at Villanova and Cleveland, and won the national championship. And we'll put that pod up so you can get these in sequential order. But here's my conversation with Steve Lapis, starting with getting the Villanova job.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
So last time we talked, okay, I remember exactly where we left off. You got the Nova job. Okay. So you get the Nova job. How old were you at the time?
I was 38.
Okay. 38. And you've been a successful head coach in Manhattan. And now you come back to Nova. First, what do you remember about kind of the whirlwind of getting the job?
Well, you know, it was an interesting story getting the job. Obviously, I didn't believe that Rolly left to go to Las Vegas. Let me just say that to start with. So I get a phone call from Rolly. This is when I wasn't even thinking about Villanova. I was a Manhattan coach. I get a phone call from Rolly at like 2 o'clock in the morning on Steve Wynn's plane. And he tells me, I'm taking the Vegas job. And I said, come on. I thought he was, you know, this way he made calls at 2 o'clock in the morning a lot. So that was not a surprise that he called me at 2 o'clock in the morning. He used to do it all the time. He did it all the time when I was his assistant. So I was like, get out of here, coach, man. You're not going to Las Vegas. He goes, yes, I am. So Jay Wright was on the plane with him. He says, here, Jay, you tell Lap. So Jay gets on the phone and says, Lap, we're going to Las Vegas. I said, really? I said, so I said, put coach back on the phone. I said, coach, of all the places to go, you're going to go to UNLV? Like, there's a zillion better places for you than UNLV following Jerry Tarkanian. And plus, you know, just the difference in the state school, private school. I'm like, are you crazy? No, I'm taking it. So he takes the job. So naturally, as soon as he takes the job, I'm thinking like, well, I mean, I was an assistant there for the championship team. We got it going at Manhattan. You know, I got to have a chance at this thing. So naturally, that's all I'm thinking about. I start trying to work the phones with some of the alums and people that I had gotten to know there. And, you know, I find out that, you know, they wanted Pete Gillen. They wanted Pete had been an assistant there, too. And so, you know, Pete had a really good job at Xavier at the time. And they wanted Pete. So I was like distraught. Like, you know, it was like I said, hey, and I had heard that Pete was on campus. So I said, if Pete's going to campus at a school that he's already been at, you know, and knows it, he's taking the job. That's it.
Right. It's done. Done. It's done.
So, lo and behold, Pete doesn't take the job, decides he wants to stay at Xavier. And now things are open. So I have a couple of alums that are helping me that really like me, but they kind of opened it up. I remember they interviewed Mike Jarvis. They interviewed Nick McCarchick. They interviewed Barry or Bruce Parkhill, one of the Parkhill brothers that was at Penn State at the time. So I was like, man, I'm in like a, you know, I'm in a horse race here. So again, though, I had some people on the inside helping me a little bit. And, you know, when I went and I met with the president, he liked me. And he said he hired me because I showed him that fire I had in my belly, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of how I operate anyway on everything. And that's how I got the job. So I really didn't think I was going to get it. And then I was in a horse race and then I got it. So it was, you know, obviously a huge thing for me to get that job at that time. So, yeah, it was an unbelievable whirlwind.
Why coach leave? First question is why coach leave?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, Coach Mass had tremendous success at Villanova. You know, everybody knows about winning the championship, but people forget he'd also been to, you know, four Final Eights in his career there, including my last year as an assistant coach there. We went to the Elite Eight. But he had started to, I don't know, want to say wear out his welcome, but, you know, he had a couple of down years. NIT, just things not going great. He got into this controversy with a cheerleader wanting to have a ponytail. You know, those were different times, you know, the early 90s, late 80s. And, you know, so he got into a controversy about that, and that didn't do him well. So when he left, it was kind of like, as crazy as it sounds, when you look back at the time, it was a good time for him to leave. I'm not surprised that he left, even though I can tell you this, he could have stayed there forever. They'd have never fired him in a million years, nor should they. But he just, I don't think he was feeling the love anymore. And now UNLV was, you know, Steve Wynn was whining and dining him and really showing him the love and obviously showing him a lot of money. And I think put it all together, that's why he left. And I think it's something that he regretted. I think he regretted that till the day he died. And I think he knows he could have stayed at Villanova forever had he been able. You know, you go through these ups and downs. I mean, you look at Jay right now. You know, seven before the 2016 championship, they were on him about not getting through the first round and the second round and not making it to the second weekend. You know, his Jay's thing at Villanova was a little tenuous at that time, but he made it through. You know, and it happens to a lot of people. And, you know, Coach Mass was in a tenuous time, and he just didn't want to see it through to get to the other side like he would have and stay there forever. So I think in the end, he regretted, you know, going to UNLV. And it didn't work out at UNLV. Obviously, only lasted 2 years, 2.5 years. And then they had this, the Regents said he had an illegal contract. It got ugly. And it just, it didn't do him well for what he deserved.
No. No. When you get a job like that that you badly wanted, and keep in mind, you know, one of your mentor left the job, a contemporary turned down the job in a Pete Gillen, right? Like you, I job so bad, you're blind to any of the flaws. Whereas other guys, they would have said, hey, you know, this could work a lot better if you did X, Y, Z. You get the job. Had you spent any time thinking, hey, there's got to be a couple downsides here other than just they were on rolling.
You know, I really didn't think of any downside, Doug, you know, because I was there for 4 years as an assistant. I kind of knew the place well. I knew the history, which was, you know, besides the fact that it's been enhanced in the last 7 years, you know, as a basketball school, it was, you know, had as good a tradition as a lot of people, maybe not North Carolina and Duke, but certainly had a really good tradition. So, you know, you always worry, like in those days, you know, Prop 48 existed. And so you knew at a place like Villanova, you couldn't take a Prop 48 kid. Whereas prior to Prop 48, when kids didn't sit out, nobody knew what a kid's SAT score was. And I'm not going to tell you that at Villanova, we didn't have a kid or two who ended up graduating and were successful, whose SATs, had there been Prop 48, wouldn't have met it. But nobody knew because right. The kid didn't have to sit out. So now Prop 48 comes in and they tell me we can't take a Prop 48. We're not going to have a kid at Villanova who's sitting out his freshman year and the whole world knows, obviously, that he didn't make 700 on his SAT. So if you want to say that was a little bit of a negative because it kind of narrowed your pool down a little bit, maybe. But other than that, I mean, you got a great academic school in an unbelievable location with a great tradition in a great league. Yeah, you know, you knew you were up against it because you had Syracuse. You had all these, you know, big schools, not necessarily big, but, you know, Carrier Dome and, you know, all these other schools that were in the league at the time that wasn't going to make it easy. But I was positive about it from day one. I was gung-ho and didn't see a lot of negatives.
So you get the job. How'd you decide to put together that staff?
Well, I decided that, number one, I was going to take with me two of the guys I had at Manhattan College, John Leonard, who played at Manhattan, and Steve Pannone, who was a walk-on at Villanova, was on my staff at Manhattan also at the time. And then, I wanted to open it up, and the truth be told, Villanova had not had an African-American assistant for probably 10 years prior to me getting there. And I thought it was very important to have an African-American on the staff, at least one African-American on the staff. I thought that was important. And so I hired Paul Hewitt, who was terrific and obviously, you know, had terrific success at you know, Siena and Georgia Tech. And now he's coaching in the G League in the NBA, and he did a tremendous job. So that's kind of how the staff came together. And then I had a basketball ops guy that was a high school coach that I had known from working at camps with me. And in those days, that job paid very little. It's not like now. So you had to get a specific guy who was willing to make that kind of a sacrifice. But the staff itself was John Leonard was a top assistant with Paul Hewitt and Steve Pannone. And, you know, it was a very good staff, and they did a great job.
And Paul came from Virginia? Was he at University of Virginia?
No, or was he? Paul came from Fordham. He was an assistant at Fordham. to Nick Mikarchik. And he was only, he played at St. John Fisher in Rochester. And he was only at Fordham, I want to say 1 year, maybe 2 years before I hired him at Villanova. And, you know, he was a terrific interview, which is no surprise. You know, he blew me away, and, you know, I hired him. And like I said, he did a tremendous job.
No, he's a brilliant guy, but he's kind of, now at this stage of his life, he's kind of professorial. I wonder if he was like that even at a young age.
He was always a very philosophical guy. There's no question about it. You know, we would get into philosophical arguments about things, you know, not just basketball, the world, you know what I mean? Things like that. So it was, he had a great family, and it was a great fit, which obviously is very, you know, when you put a staff together, you kind of want to try to do it so it fits, but you never know if it's going to fit. And, you know, this one fit pretty good.
What was left when he got there, players wise?
Well, what was left was a senior class that was very highly rated, but people considered underachieving. So I had like five seniors, and when they came in, it was like, you know, I don't know if you probably will remember the names, you know, Aaron Bain was like a, you know, I don't know if people remember, Aaron Bain was a guy who was a top 10 guy in the country when he was a freshman and sophomore in high school. And Lance Miller and James Bryson and Calvin Bird was a McDonald's All-American. So it was a very, very highly rated, and there was another, well, Anthony Pell was a junior. It was a very highly rated recruiting class that really didn't do a lot. So it was a tough situation for them and for me to come in seniors, hadn't accomplished a lot. They didn't know me because I left Villanova. I left Villanova, you know, before these guys came in. I recruited Lance Miller, so I knew these kids, and I recruited James Bryson, but I never coached them. So here they were playing for a legend. You got this young guy coming in, their senior year, they underachieved, and we lost a ton of close games. And, you know, I don't want to say it wasn't easy connecting with these guys and getting them, you know what I mean, to buy in after being with such a strong guy like Coach Mass, underachieving, coming in. I think some of the guys felt like, all right, now I'm going to do my thing. And, you know, I think a couple of them tried to do their thing, and it didn't work out because we lost a ton of close games. We had some good wins. We beat Syracuse at Syracuse when they were like number two in the country. So we had some talent, but we just lost a million close games.
How are you as a coach? How are you handling those emotions, right? As you said, you got the fire in your belly, and now you get to a dream job, and it's not going as well as you'd like. How are you?
You know, the feeling more than anything else, Doug, was the cavalry's coming next year. In that, you know, we had signed Alvin Williams and Jason Lawson, and Rasheed Wallace was coming to every one of our games. See, one of the kids that we inherited, who was a great kid and a really good player, and one of the, and maybe the best leader I ever had, was Jonathan Haynes. He was also, we talked about that senior class, but Jonathan Haynes was also on that team, and he was a key guy because he transferred from Temple, and he was Rolly's first recruit from Philadelphia in a long time. So we had this one Philly kid on our team. He happened to be friends, really good friends, with Alvin Williams and Jason Lawson, and him and Rasheed Wallace were best friends. So now Rasheed would come to every game, and he'd come in the locker room after we'd lose, whatever, be in the locker room. He'd come in and say, "Coach, don't worry, this ain't happening next year." And I'd go home the happiest guy in the world because I'm going to have Alvin Williams, Jason Lawson, Rasheed Wallace, Jonathan Haynes. And, you know, my assistants would joke with me. They'd say, "Coach, it's not going to be fair." I said, "Well, that's all right. It don't have to be fair. I just want to get them all." So, and Rasheed committed to me three times. He came, he was at every game, like I said, that year, because his boys were playing for me. And I mean, his boy John Haynes, and he knew Alvin was coming. They were friends. And I mean, Rasheed was the best high school player in the country. And so he came into my office, I'll never forget. And he said, "Coach, when next year, can I get room 322 in St. Mary's Hall? I said, Rashid, you can get 322, 323, and 324 if you want. And you can have them all. And then so I say, Rashid, I know you're coming. Why don't you have a press conference? He said, oh, no, I'm going to have a press conference. I said, no, you know, because, you know, this is a verbal commitment. So I'm like, Rashid, because he didn't sign early because he didn't have his SAT scores yet. He wanted to wait. So I said, Rashid, listen, okay, have your press conference. That's all. Just have a press conference. No, he wouldn't have the press conference. So, you know, again, that's what got me through that year was, all right, we'll do the best we can. These kids, and they were good kids, those seniors. You know what I mean? Well, I don't blame them. They were, I mean, I have a good relationship with all those kids to this day. But we just didn't play good. And so I knew, I said, let me get to the end of the year. These kids are going to leave. They're going to graduate. I want them to leave with a good taste in their mouth, too, about what we tried to do. And then next year, you know, the troops are coming. So that's what got me through the year. At a tough time for sure.
So, how did the Rashid thing go down?
Well, what happened was it was three schools. It was Temple, it was us by ourselves, basically. I thought, and Temple in North Carolina. He definitely didn't want to go to Temple. He just didn't want to go to school in downtown Philadelphia, and I think there was a lot of pressure because everybody knew he was coming to Villanova. And I think a lot of people pressured him that, you know, if you're not going to go to Temple, and where John Chaney was, who was a legend, you're going to go play at Villanova for this guy. And I think those feelings ended up chasing him out of town. I really believe that to this day. And so I don't think the fact that and he was never going to Temple. But he didn't want to go there for whatever reason. You know what I mean? I think, like I said, it was and John Chaney obviously is one of the greatest coaches who ever lived. And he was winning all kinds of games at that time. But the kid just didn't want to go to school in Philadelphia. And I just think that, you know, sometimes people don't understand this recruiting stuff is weird. That, you know, sometimes that it's not he wants to go, he doesn't want to go. Sometimes in a situation like this, I really feel that it was like, if you're not going to Temple, you're going to stay in the city? No, you should go. And I think a lot of people talked him into leaving. And I was North Carolina. It was Dean Smith. I'm not talking about, you know, chopped liver here either. And they won the championship. And apparently they win the championship and Dean Smith didn't go to the parade the next day. He went to Rashid's house. Now, even with all that, and let me tell you about how we recruited him, Doug, because in those days, you know, you couldn't go talk to him. He would lift weights every day. Either me or one of my assistants would be outside where he was lifting weights just to wave at him when he walked out because you couldn't talk to him every day. Right. Every day. So, I mean, we talk about, and you know, because you've been in basketball, your dad was a coach and your brother's a coach. You know, when they say we lived with him, oh, we lived with him.
No, my dad would tell me stories about in the 70s. How he literally lived with some of the recruits. Like the parents would be like, don't go to hotels, just stay here.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he'd sign a kid and you just babysit him. You'd actually live with him.
Yeah.
You know? And then they changed it to where now you can't make contact, but you'd just be there for a bump as often as possible. What is that like when you get the call that he's not coming?
Let me tell you something. I had just landed at Philadelphia Airport, and I was driving back to campus. And, you know, in those days, 1992, we had cell phones. The cell phone looked like a big walkie-talkie they used to use in the Army in World War II. I don't know if you remember those things. So I had one of those in my car, and it rings, and I'll never forget. I pick up the phone, and Rashid says, hey, Coach, it's Sheed. And I'm like, oh, no, this can't be good. This can't be good. And so he says, I'll never forget. He didn't say North Carolina. He said, I decided to go to UNC. And I was like, Rashid, I mean, all the time, everything that we've talked about, and I can't believe it. And he said, Coach, I made my mind up. So I didn't try to talk him out of it, to be honest with you. I didn't. You know, I figured the kid called me at that point. He was set. He knew everything about us. I wasn't going to – certainly wasn't going to badmouth Dean Smith or North Carolina. Nothing to badmouth him about. And that was it. I almost drove off the road, I can tell you that, when he called me. And I'll tell you this. So he has a press conference 2 days later. Now he's having the press conference. He has the press conference. I'll never forget this. So on the news, they played the song by James Taylor, Going to Carolina. I swear to God, every time I hear that song, and I love James Taylor, I got to turn it off. I can't listen to it to this day. I can't listen to the song Going to Carolina by James Taylor because they played it at his press conference, and I never, ever forgot it. So every time that song comes on, I think about Rasheed Wallace, so I shut it off.
So you do have a new group of freshmen, and they became really, really, really good. So you process the guys you don't get with the guys you do get. What was that first year like?
It was really interesting, and we had a heck of a year. We basically ended up like 16-12. Now you got to understand, in that Big East, we were 500, and we were like when you think about RPIs and stuff, which really didn't exist then, we were like, in the 50s, we were like the last or first, one of the first two teams left out of the tournament that year. So we had a good year. But, you talk about recruiting now, and I know you remember us because you played against us. But so I watch my first year when I had those seniors, we also had three freshmen, Kerry Kittles, who we knew was going to be something special, Eric Ebers, and a kid named Roscoe Harris. Now, we knew Kittles was going to be good. Eric Ebers was so bad his freshman year, I didn't even know what he was. He couldn't make a shot. He was too small to be a four-man. He couldn't shoot to be a three-man. I said, what? I killed my assistants to go get us a small forward. We had a kid committed named, I don't know if you remember, Jamal Robinson. It was actually an assistant at LaSalle, I believe, who's a good player at Virginia. We recruited so many really good small forwards, didn't get any of them. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, we're in trouble at this. Now, we got Alvin Williams. We got Jason Lawson. And I said, we're going to be in big trouble. We got no small forward. So we're playing an early December game at Georgetown, and we get in foul trouble. And they were ranked at the time. And I put Ebers in the game. The guy makes three threes. He didn't make a three as a freshman, not a one. I watched him practice every day. And I tell him to this day, Eric, I swear to God, I watched you practice every day and thought you were a scrub. Well, from that day on, he scored 1,500 points in his career. And he was right under my nose, and I thought he couldn't play. So, so now Eric Ebers becomes something we didn't expect. We knew Lawson was going to be really good. We had Kittles, who became now, an All-American as a sophomore, first team All-Big East. And all of a sudden, this thing just fell together. And, we missed the NCAA tournament by a game. And we had John Haynes. And we had a kid named Ron Wilson, who we inherited from Coach Mass, who hadn't really done anything. And, we end up winning the NIT that year. And the NIT I always say this, Doug, the NIT is great with a young team like we had. We had all freshmen and sophomores, so it was good. But it's definitely a championship you don't want to defend. And so, we won it that year. And, I think that helped us take off. And it was a sold-out Madison Square Garden. We were down to Billy McCaffrey and Vanderbilt 17 at halftime. And we ended up winning that game and winning the NIT with that team as freshman and sophomore. So you could see it's coming. You could see it.
I know you'd won a national championship, right, as part of that staff. And you'd done a lot of things. But as a New Yorker, was it a little different to win in the Garden?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to win in the Garden and to fast forward a year, probably the best win of my career was, we beat UConn in the Big East Championship game the next year in the Garden. And there's no question. I used to go to the Garden because I lived in Washington Heights, It was a 20-minute subway ride away when I was a kid. I'd go down there all the time. It was like a dream. And I have a picture in my basement cutting the net down in Madison Square Garden. It's like greatest. Put it this way. The greatest moment of my professional life was that night in Madison Square Garden.
Was beating UConn?
Was beating UConn that night because, for a couple of reasons. One, didn't have a lot of success in the NCAA tournament, obviously, which is a big reason why, you know, I ended up in broadcasting. But yeah, that was the biggest. I mean, we won a state championship in New York when I was coaching in high school, and we won a MAC championship in when I was at Manhattan. But yeah, that was the biggest moment of my professional life. And here's the crazy thing, Doug. 4 days later, I had the lowest moment of my professional life.
Yep.
And that is what's so crazy about this business. The highest moment to the lowest moment in 4 days. But that's what happens.
Okay, so Kittles was there when you got there, right? But the stories of him were he was just so skinny. Right. That was how they got him. Like, how'd they get Kerry Kittles to Nova?
Well, here's the crazy thing. He had his schools were Vanderbilt, Tulane, and Villanova. Okay. Here's a kid from New Orleans that LSU didn't recruit. So that tells you that he wasn't that high. I mean, yeah, he might have been a top 100 kid, 150 kid, but he wasn't a top 30 kid. So a lot of people didn't want him because he was skinny. Truth be told, now I get the job, Doug. And naturally, the first thing I do is I call the three recruits. Kerry Kittles was coming in, and Eric Ebers was coming in, and Roscoe Harris was coming in. So, I visit Eric Ebers' house. I mean, again, I didn't know if any of these guys were any good. Had no idea. I'd never seen them. Never. And so I go to Eric Ebers' house, and, you know, his parents were like, look, if anybody was coaching, we'd still want him to go there. I said, well, thanks. I appreciate that. And so he was coming. And same kind of with Roscoe Harris. He was coming. But Kittles, I'm not coming. I'm not coming. I refuse. I'm not coming to Villanova. So he was really – so first thing I do, the first day I'm on the job, I fly to New Orleans. And I go to his house. And he came from a great program that you probably know, St. Augustine Prep in New Orleans – and which Avery Johnson played there. A lot of great players played there. And we go to his house, and his mother and father really wanted him to go to Villanova. They were very religious people. They wanted him to come, and they were trying to help me, coach, you know, and I didn't know them from a hole in the wall, but they wanted him to come. And the coach, the high school coach, Bernard Griffith, who was a great guy and a great coach, he wanted him to come. But the kid, I walk in the house, he won't look at me. Won't look at me. I'm sitting on a couch here against the wall, and he's sitting like on a love seat right to my left. He's looking straight ahead. He won't look at me. So naturally, I start my spiel. I say, Kerry, listen. Now, in those days, you signed the letter of intent. If you didn't go to the school, you lose a year's eligibility. Sit out a year. You lose a year. So I'm saying, Kerry, listen. What sense does it make? You decided to come to this school. So it's not like you decided to go to a place that's like jail. You liked it, obviously. Why lose a year's eligibility and not come when you can come and then leave if you don't like it? At least that way you'll get your 4 years, because in those days people weren't thinking about one and dones. You get your 4 years. So come. Wouldn't look at me. So anyway, I'm talking and, you know, I'm trying to joke, and his parents are laughing, whatever. He starts to loosen up towards the end. So I really feel like this thing is gotten a lot better. I think things are going to be good. So anyway, I'm there like 3 hours, leave the house. All the reporters are outside because it's a big story in New Orleans. Kerry Kittles is not going to Villanova. So the reporters are outside. Coach, you know, what do you think? I said, oh, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll be coming. So I leave. I go back to my hotel room. And I put on the 11 o'clock news, and it shows me making my comments. And right after I left, Kittles came out and they said, what do you think? He said, I'm not going to Villanova. I said, oh my God, I got to come back again. So I see him on the news say, I'm not going there. No way. So now I'm like, okay, I had some things I had to do. I come back down 2 days later, and now he's got a little more comfort with me. He's seen me before. He didn't know who I was. And he decides to give it a go. it made sense really for him. He gave it a go, and then he had his moments as freshman. He was homesick. I mean, you know, you bring a kid from New Orleans to Philadelphia, and, you know, it's a little bit of a culture shock in a lot of ways. You come from the South to the Northeast. Big city, even though we're in the suburbs. So he had his moments where he didn't know if he was going to stick it out, but he did. And, you know, the funny thing, Doug, is that he's as proud of Villanova. He was on the board of trustees for a while. Here's a kid that didn't want to come, that wanted to leave. And that's why all this transfer stuff drives me nuts that's going on now. You know what I mean? Kids picking up. If Kerry Kittles didn't have to sit out, he would have never come to Villanova. And if he didn't have to sit out his freshman year, after his freshman year, he'd have left and gone somewhere else. No question. Instead, he sticks it out, ends up getting a master's degree from Villanova in business, ends up loving the place like there's no tomorrow. This would not have happened today, in my opinion. He'd have been gone.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Okay, so how have we gotten to this place? You and I are so aligned on it. And what happens is somehow the business that we're now in the media, has accepted it as fact, as law, that you and I are crazy, that holding these kids to any sort of accountability of staying at a school is way above the standard of what should be fair. Whereas we both know, it's like, I tell people the story all the time. My third week of practicing at Notre Dame, I'm getting my ass kicked. And I only went to Notre Dame because, among the other things, I could start as a freshman, right? There's Admore White was there. He had started some in pinch duty, but they didn't think he was good enough. So, like, you'll come here, you'll start, be your team right away. And we're in practice. And, you know, I'm getting my ass kicked. I'm a freshman. I had never been... I'm just running into screens. Admore's killing me every day. Mm-hmm. I went in and saw our mutual friend, Philly guy, Fran McCaffrey. And I just said, send me home. I'm not good enough. Send me home. And I'm crying. I'm homesick. You know, the weather's awful in South Bend. It's just gray every day. I just wanted to leave. And obviously I left and I was considering leaving when I had to leave, but it's the same idea that I would have stuck it out because you're never going to know until you get to that second year, until you kind of go all in, right? You mentally and emotionally unpack. And, you know, fast forward to my 3 years at Oklahoma State, there was a time midway through my junior year where I was in coach's doghouse that I wanted to leave again. We were actually playing UNLV in Vegas, the Desert Classic. We had just lost to Creighton and I was miserable and I wanted to go, like, I had in my mind, I'm going to go play for Rick Majerus in Utah. Somehow that's going to make things right. You know, or my brother was at San Diego State. They were just starting out. Maybe I'll just go there and just be the guy. But again, fast forward, you know, everything in my life has really started because of my ties to Oklahoma State, right? I'm on the board. I'm on the board of not the Regents. What is it called? Board of Governors, mm-hmm. Right? You know, there's all these different things I'm able to do. And if you just leave a school, I don't think people understand exactly what you're leaving behind. You leave behind that. It's not really your alma mater anymore. You're not coming back for alumni games. You're not in that very, I've heard of like two different times. Other than that, you're not like getting a job from that coach. He's not going to help you in the coaching. But why would he help you? You're leaving him, right? Yeah. But how did we get this point, Lap, to where guys just without even worrying about it. They just leave and everybody champions like an open free market.
You know, Doug, it's amazing. And you put it perfectly because, and you feel this probably more than me because you're entrenched in the media 12 months a year. All I can say is I've tweeted about it a couple of times and I don't have all that many followers or anything. The vitriol that comes back when you say that this is bad is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I'm sure you have felt it. So, I mean, people just feel like the perception is these kids are getting screwed. These coaches can do whatever they want. They're making all this money off these kids. This isn't right. That's it. There's the feeling. Forget about the fact that, and I used to, you know how many kids I had, Doug? It's exact. You said it perfect. How many kids I had that after their freshman year wanted to leave? And I said, listen, come back for your sophomore year. Try it. You'll see what happens. Because all of a sudden, you're not homesick because you're going back to something you know. So the homesickness isn't there anymore. And so coming back for your sophomore year is absolutely the key. And how many kids nowadays are leaving after their freshman year and don't even give it a chance, and they're going to four schools in 4 years? You, like you say, you don't think it's a big deal now, but guess what? You're not going to play in an alumni game, and you're not going to have the benefits of your alma mater because you went to four schools in 4 years. It's ridiculous. And we don't teach these kids how to stick things out. Guess what? A lot of times in your life, you got to persevere, as we all know as adults. But what kind of a lesson are we teaching? No. We're taking advantage of the kids, and we want to make money off the kids, and coaches can go wherever they're not. And you know what I told people about the coaches? For every coach that leaves to go to a better job, 15 got fired. Okay? So, I mean, yeah, that may be true. That may be true. But guess what? We always talk about the guy who moved to the better job. How about all these guys that are getting bounced every year?
Well, I also think it's like we're comparing the professor and the student, right?
That's true.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but the coaches earned a little bit different, right? There is a buyout in their contract. And I also think they think of coaches changing jobs very willy-nilly, whereas it's a massive, massive undertaking. And everything you do when you leave a school affects everybody. Whereas if a player leaves a school, it's really, he's just worrying about him.
Right.
You know, so we're comparing apples and oranges. I mean, I got a buddy, Brian Montanati, who he's a high school coach at Owosso High School, but his son is arguably the best freshman in the country. And, you know, Oklahoma State's his school. And he went to Cal State Fullerton for like a minute, then he went to Fullerton College. But after his first year at Oklahoma State, like, he only played in 13 games. You know, he had game-winning free throws to beat Oklahoma, but he played in 13 games, got carried off the floor as a hero. But today, everybody would say, hey, you got to leave. You know, he only played half the games, right? Yeah. By our senior year, he was a starter. He played 8 years overseas. He's made a complete career and life for himself. But the bigger thing is, the part that nobody tells you is, like, hey, when this stuff all ends, it's like you're connected with that whole Villanova family. Like, you're actually, even though you didn't play there, you're the perfect example. When they won the first championship, you were as much a part of it as anybody on that staff, right? As was anybody who played at Villanova. They all feel a part of it. It's special. If you lost your job at CBS Sports and you said, you know what, I want to coach one more time, you'd call one of your Nova guys and they'd be like, come be the old head on staff, travel around with us for a couple of years. You'll have a great time. And the same thing happens when you're a player, right? When you get done playing, you don't really know what you want to do, right? Do I want to coach? I don't know. Can I be a broadcaster? Do I go into marketing? Do I stay at the school? And the first place you usually call is your coach.
Yep.
And your coach says, you know, look, if you want to come be on staff, I'll find something for you. If you want to do something else, I'll find, like, there's all these North Carolina, like the North Carolina Mafia. They take care of the Duke Mafia. They take care of their guys. And I just, for some reason, we don't have the ability to tell the entirety of the story, which is, yeah, for every one or two kids that a school makes a bunch of money off, the truth is you're spending a bunch of money on other kids that you're not making money on, right? And, oh, yeah, by the way, you're just promoting the school. It's not like it's going in everybody else's pocket. And that kid, he'll be fine. It's all the other kids that think they're that kid that are going to leave and ruin their future, or maybe not ruin their future, but hurt their own future because of the visions of grandeur elsewhere. All right. So you beat, so this is Kittles is, what is this, his junior year, right? You yes. win the big title, and it wasn't like a squeaker.
No.
Right? You beat UConn by like 16.
Yeah.
Okay. You smoke them in the garden. What happened that week between there and Old Dominion?
So, you know, we went back to the hotel after the game. We were staying at the Plaza to watch the selection show, because in those days, the Big East Championship game was right leading up to the selection show. It's, now they do it with the Big Ten, but in those days, it was the Big East Championship. So we won the championship, and we went back to the hotel to watch the show. It was Sunday afternoon. And, you know, we were a little surprised that we had beaten Connecticut 2 out of 3 that year. We were a little surprised, and we had also beaten them that year. They were number one in the country, and we went up there and beat them by 20 that game too. And wow. they were a 2 seed, and we were a 3 seed. So we were a little surprised by that, but okay, you know. And so we see that we're playing Old Dominion. They're 14, and we're going to Albany. So that week, I remember the athletic director was Gene DeFilippo, and he said, "Hey, you guys, you know, I'm telling you," because he coached football, and he said, "You know, I'm going to get you guys a hotel room near the school, and you guys can get a suite there, and just, you know, so you don't have to answer the phones or whatever, and get ready." Okay, great. That's, you know, that's what we did. So we went, stayed in this hotel, and got ready for Old Dominion, and we go up, obviously, and we had won, I believe. Now, after that championship game against UConn, we'd won like 14 in a row in that Big East in those days. Right. 12, 13, 14. We had a big winning streak, big. And it actually started when we beat Florida at Florida at the buzzer in January in a game. And then we went on this long streak. So we were the hottest team in the country. Everybody was picking us to go to the Final Four. Everybody. Everybody. So even though we were 3 seed, we were like the pick. And we go to Albany and play so bad. And, you know, it was a little bit of a, you know, we win our first Big East championship 4 days before, 5 days before. And then just we're flat. Kittles. I didn't watch the game for like 15 years. And I've watched it a couple of times in the last 5 years. And Kerry was so – in the first half, he had like 2 points and 4 turnovers. We were just so bad, so flat, just flat.
Go ahead. Do you think they were nervous?
I don't think they were nervous, no. I mean, I think we got nervous as the game went on. Like all these people that talk about – you know, all these people that talk about, you know – the pressure is on the lower, the higher seed. It's true. You know what I mean? As the game went on, oh yeah, you started to feel it. No question. You had this unbelievable season, and now you're in a dogfight. But the truth is, we were up the whole game. We played bad. But in the second half, we were up the whole second half, like 5-7, 3-7. You know, it was a typical NCAA game in a lot of ways. You see these games all the time where a lower seed is hanging in there with a higher seed. You're not going to just come in and beat them by 30. You know what I mean? So it was one of those games. So we still looked like we were going to win, but it was close. So now 8 seconds to go in the game, we're up 3. And they had a guy named Petey Sessoms. I don't know if you remember him. He was a really good player. And he takes a flyer 3 from the corner when we're up 3, and Jason Lawson fouls him. He makes all 3. We're up, and the shot that he took had no chance of going in. This game's over. We get that one rebound, game's over, no Old Dominion. And you know how this goes, Doug. You know, it's easy for me to say now, but that team could have won it. If we got by that game, and you see it happen all the time where, you know, Tyus Edney, what he did, and you know what I mean? You got to get by that one game sometime.
Yes.
Somehow.
Yes.
Somehow. Yeah. And then you could go, you could win the whole thing after that. And so we're up three with 8 seconds to go. We foul him. He makes all three. We come down. We call the play. Jason Long's got a layup. Layup. The guy guarding him was 6'7". He was 6'11". Got a layup. Misses it at the buzzer. So we go overtime. Back and forth. Tie, tie, tie. We got the ball. Last shot. Got another layup. Miss. Second overtime. John Haynes got a 10-foot jumper. We got the last shot again. Got a 10-foot jumper. Hits the side of the backboard. Third overtime. Tight, tight. Turnover. Score and one. Go down five. Lose in triple overtime.
Fly home or bus home?
Fly.
Thank never, God.
Never felt so sick in my life. Never. Sick. You know, I mean, you know, because, you know, you were a basketball family. Sick. Sick. Like sick. Like, you don't want to, you hate to say, I mean, you hate to say, no, it's not a death, of course. Obviously, death is much more serious than that. But, man.
Is it the season is over? And it was just, it's like you said, like just 5 days before, you'd won the Big East and you're thinking, we can win this whole damn thing. Like, again, I understand in the grand scheme of things, but when you put your whole life into something and, you know, it just, it's over so fast, so fast. And yeah, I totally understand. I understand that you hadn't watched the game until a couple of years ago. I, you know, these games until a couple of years ago, I totally get it. Totally get it. And then it kind of consumes you and you don't get to play for like 7 months.
And you know what, Doug? You're right. It is like a death. That it is the death of that team.
Yes.
And that team that did so much. And like you said, the quickness of the finality is mind boggling. How can this thing be over? It was a locker. We sat in that locker room for a half hour without saying a word.
I have a, it's kind of a hypothesis. So let's talk this out for a second, because there are people that think we, like guys like us, we take it too seriously, right? Like, I'll be honest with you, Mark Few, I remember one of his first great teams. They lost to Texas Tech in the second round and they had the game won. And I just remember it was with they lost to Bob Knight in Texas. And I remember calling Mark Few like, I'm going to give it a day. Then I'm going to call him. And I called him and I can barely hear him. And he's out fly fishing. Right. And like, part of me is like, man, that's a guy who gets it, man. Right. Like, F it. I'm out there fly fishing. I'm going to find my center. You know, like, he's got little kids at the time. But I would say if I was in that position, like, I'm still mad we lost to Oklahoma my last regular season game. Like, we're up 9, coach subbed me out. I'm still fucking pissed about that shit, right? Hey, I know exactly what happened play for play. So I know there's a bunch of ways to do it. But I think most of us are more like you and me than we are like Mark. But is it healthy? I don't know, to allow it to consider. I think it is. Because I think you allow yourself to believe and to dream. And part of the reason that it comes to an end so quickly is, one, our own egos. We think we can win every game. But two, how are you going to sell a team? Like I've never sat in a scouting report and the coach is like, we got no shot, right? Everybody's like, look, if you do this, you do X, Y, Z, rest will take care of itself, you win the game. And so you believe, I'm in. And then you have an ego of yourself, you're like, I'm in. So having now kind of been removed from it, what's the healthy way to approach it? To go mentally, emotionally all in and die with these wins and losses, or to have the more balanced approach?
You know, unfortunately, you're talking to a guy who doesn't only knows one way. And do I wish I had a more balanced way of doing it? Yeah, I probably would have been. Now, I've been out for so long, so. You know what I mean? Like my wife says, you're so much healthier now. You're so much this, that. I say, yeah, but you know what? That locker room after a win, you can't get that anywhere. Nowhere.
Nope.
That's what they, like, what do you miss? That's what I miss. I miss practice. I miss my assistants. I miss the camaraderie. But you know what you really miss? That feeling after a win. In that locker room, you're not getting that anywhere, no matter what. And that's what you really miss. So, you know, it's yeah. Do I wish I had, you know, I was always a pretty balanced guy in terms of family. And you know, one thing, Doug, I worked very hard at what I did. I never came home and watched the tape, ever. When I came home, I came home. So, I mean, I think I had a pretty good balance with trying to, you know, see my kids play their games and do what I had to do at home and obviously work really hard there. So, but when it came to winning and losing, yeah, I mean, it was all in my heart. It's, I had nothing I could do. Losing made me sick and, you know, just the way it always was.
So you get home from losing that game, but now Kittle's returned for his senior year. Right. Again, you talk about things that don't happen anymore. He averaged over 20 a game. You win the Big East title. What was that offseason like in terms of Kerry deciding to return?
You know, it was we only had a couple of weeks of worrying about it, you know, because he basically said, yeah, I want to come back. He really loved college. He loved Villanova. He loved, you know, I mean, he was a first team All-American and he was feeling was, you know, it'll be there next year for me too. So obviously we were happy. So we didn't have one of those off seasons where you're like, really, what the heck's going on here for months? You know what I mean? No, it didn't have that. So it was pretty set. And now we've got just about the whole team back. So, you know, we're preseason like four or five, you know what I mean? But, you know, so we got the whole team back except for Jonathan Haynes, who graduated. You know, we had it was Lawson, Cornegay, Alvin Williams, Ebers, and Kittles. That's a pretty good starting five.
John Celestine off the bench, too, was very good.
John Celestine was off the bench. Howard Brown was a freshman. Ron Wilson was still on that team. So, I mean, that team, you know, we were really good. And we, you know, we had a very good – we went to Maui and we beat North Carolina in the championship game. And when we got back, we were number two in the nation. So that's we got that high. And you know, we had a good regular season. And then at the end of the year, and here, you know, you hate to lament certain things. And people say, oh, you're whatever, crying wolf. Or, you got to have some luck in this, too. So, you know, the end of the year, we're on one of those rolls again. We win like 10 in a row in the Big East. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call from our athletic director. I was on a recruiting trip, and he says, hey, we got a problem. I said, well, what's the problem? He says, you know, Kerry was using the SID's phone card and making phone calls. I said, what? So apparently, the SID had given him his phone credit card number to call a reporter down in New Orleans at one time, and he kept it naturally. He's a kid, and he's making phone calls all over the place, you know, home, whatever. He ran up about, I don't know, $500 worth of bills, $700. So now I go in the athletic director's office. I said, Gene, all right, he pays it back, and that's the end of it. He's got to pay it back or he can't play. So he says, well, you know, we really do have to report it. I said, Gene, schools take care of this stuff. If he doesn't pay it back, you report him. It's a violation. If he pays it back, how's it a violation? That's it. Let him pay it back, and that's the end of it. No, he's going to pay it back, but we got to report it. Huh? Comes back. There's three games left in the season. NCAA suspends him for the last three games. And again, we're run 10 games in a row. We're on a roll. Everything's going great. This happens. Now, this is big news, obviously, around the country. You got a first team All-American suspended for the last three games of the season for this. And he is a very sensitive kid. He's embarrassed. You know, he's embarrassed by this. And I'll tell you, we played UConn in the Spectrum, sold out Spectrum. We were like number four in the country. They were like number seven. He don't play. We lose, we score 55 points. We lose like 62, 55 or something like that. And we were never the same. And he was never the same. So we go to the NCAA tournament. And, you know, again, so there's one piece of bad luck right there. So with the phone card we carry. Then we go to the NCAA tournament And we're like, I guess we're a 2 seed. I forget what we were. 3 seed. We beat Portland in the first game by like 40.
Yes.
Second game, we play Louisville. Now, Louisville that year, they ended up being like a 8 seed. I forget what seed they were. But they were much lower than they were supposed to be because I don't know if you remember a guy named Samaki Walker. Well, yep. he was suspended for 12 games that year for taking an illegal benefit, but he's coming back for the NCAA tournament. So they end up being like a 6 or 7 seed. They've probably been a 2 or 3 seed. That's who we get in the second round. Samaki Walker's back. We don't play well, out again. So now the heat on me is mounting. Okay, you had these two teams that are like, you know, and you can't get out of the first weekend. So the heat is on. There's no, you know, we still got a good team coming back the next year. We got Tim Thomas coming in. But now it's do or die time here in terms of, you know, yeah. Could I have overcome it? Sure. If we went to the Elite Eight the following that year, nobody would have ever thought about Old Dominion. But Old Dominion rests. And here's what I told this to Rick Neuheisel the other day, who was in the studio with us. I said, Coach, and you could relate to this, Doug. The one thing you don't want to do, you don't want to be the captain of the ship for the worst loss in the history of the school. And if you ask any Villanova person who's over 40 years old, what's the worst loss in the history of the school? That's where they're going right away. And I was the captain of the ship. And we weren't, and we did not overcome it. Jay had the chance to overcome it. I didn't have the chance to overcome it. Didn't. And that's where it went.
Yeah, but you won the Big East the next year.
Yeah. Yeah. But
that's what's crazy about it. What? Okay, so compare and contrast recruiting Tim Thomas to recruiting Rasheed Wallace.
Well, you know, it was Tim. I think part of it was, I don't know that Dean Smith wanted to get involved with another one and done. Tim was a great kid, by the way. Great kid. I mean, I love him. His recruitment was weird because it's kind of like we were hanging in there. First of all, Paul Hewitt was good friends with his high school coach. But I mean, I hired his high school coach as my ops guy. And that's probably a big reason why he came.
Yeah.
But were we in there? Yes, we were in there. And, you know, it's funny because this happens all the time. That happened in 1997. And, other coaches buried me. And this happens all the time. It happens a lot. Or used to happen a lot. Anyway, so.
No, happens all the time. I mean, you hire like people, parents.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, do I think we would have had a good shot at him anyway? Yes, I do. Did that probably send it over the top? Probably did. You've got to tell the truth. And so that's how Tim ended up coming. And he was a great kid. And he averaged 18-9 as a freshman.
What is that like, though, to have somebody who's on your staff who the perception is he's only there for one kid? Like, how did you manage that?
You know, Jimmy Salmon's a very bright guy. He had coached at Patterson Catholic for a long time. It's not like he was a guy who was not coaching. You know what I mean? This guy coached and won a lot of games at Patterson Catholic for many, many years. So he was a basketball guy. So he was great to have in our meetings and doing whatever we did. You know, he added to what we did. That I wasn't sure he wanted to be in college for the long haul. I think that's what he was trying to figure out when he was doing this. You know, it's, you know, obviously a lot of hours that you don't expect when you're a high school coach. I was a high school coach. And when I went to work for Rolly, I was like, whoa, I couldn't believe I couldn't believe you drove 4 hours to watch a kid play and drive 4 hours back. Whenever I drove 4 hours, you know, I mean, I stayed for the weekend before that. You know, this was different. So he was very good and he added a lot to the staff and it was fine. And I knew him for a long time. It's not like I just met him. I knew Jimmy for years. So it's not like he was a guy I just met and said, hey, I'm going to hire you. I knew him for a long time.
Okay. So that, but again, like that, year, you make it seem like the Old Dominion thing was hanging over your head. You won the Big East. Then you win your first round game of that tournament, and you come up on Cal, right? You lost in the – you lose in the Big East Finals to Boston College? Did they win the whole thing?
Yep, we lost in the Big East Finals.
And they had that was Scooney. That was Scooney's last year there, I think.
Yes.
They were good. I mean, people forget how good the Big East was.
Yeah, they were good. Yeah, the Big East, as you know, then was unbelievable. Yeah.
Okay, you beat LIU your first game. What do you remember about the Cal game?
I remember Tony Gonzalez up faking Tim Thomas, and Tim picked up his third foul. In the first half, I had him in, and I remember that. And I remember they had a guy named Jonathan Duck, and what's his name? The GM Randy of the Nets, Sean Marks.
Randy Duck. I actually played Randy with Duck. Randy. Yep.
Randy Duck, and they had Sean Marks, and Tony Gonzalez was their best player.
Yeah, they had unbelievable talent.
And so we didn't play well. We did not play well again. Didn't play well. Can I explain it? Hey, you know, I always, you know, coaching is a funny thing. Was I a bad coach in the tournament? I don't know. Maybe I was. You know what I mean? I don't know. I didn't win. I don't think so. I thought that we prepared. We coached. I think if you ask my guys, they'll tell you that they thought I was a good coach. Things happened. And just, you know. For whatever reason. Now, that particular team, chemistry wasn't great. Not the kids not getting along. It was my fault in a lot of ways because I felt loyal. I feel like I'm a loyal guy. So I got Jason Lawson, Chuck Gornegay, Alvin Williams back for their senior years. And really, Tim Thomas should have been a college foreman. Perfect foreman in college. I played him at the three so that I could keep playing Cornegay. And it wasn't a great mix, to be honest with you. Tim should have been a full-time foreman when I look back on that team, you know, but I would have had to take Chuck Cornegay out of the lineup, who was my guy, who came to Villanova, took a, you know what I mean? You feel for these kids too. You know what I mean? You just, you know, if it was just, hey, heck with Chuck, we're better with Tim Thomas as a foreman, which we probably would have been, but we didn't do it. So that team won a lot of games. It won a lot of games. Went into the Big East Championship game, but I don't know if we ever developed the kind of chemistry that my other teams had. On the floor, these kids all got along. They loved Tim Thomas. Had nothing to do. Like, people always think chemistry, oh, they don't like each other. Oh, no, no. That's got nothing to do with it most of the time.
About playing, sometimes it's hard to play with other guys.
Yeah, it's fit.
Right?
It's fit.
You can so like fit. A guy. Playing with other guys is a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really kind of what it comes down to.
No question.
You also suffered from the when the one and done exits. So Tim, again, back then there weren't many one and duns. What was it like when that season ended?
Yeah, that one was different. That one we were like, you know, and I told Tim, see, Tim was the youngest of five kids. His mom was older. He wasn't an 18-year-old kid whose mother was, you know, 45. He was an 18-year-old kid whose mother was almost 70 and was cleaning houses and things like that. So he came from a totally different situation. And so I told him, I brought him in the office. I said, Tim, here's what I mean. I know your situation. And if you feel like you got to leave, I understand. I said, but I think I owe it to you to tell you that I think you would benefit by staying a year and having the heat on you. See, because Alvin Williams and Jason Lawson, they were the leaders of the team. They took all the heat. So, you know, after a game, if something didn't go well, people went to them. I said, it would help you from a maturity standpoint to be the guy in the heat, be the leader, have the heat. For 1 year, I think that will help you. But do I understand if you leave? Yeah, of course I do. And that's, you know, he didn't really put us through a long ordeal in 2 weeks or a week. it was a done deal. But that's what I told. And I said, hey, listen, if you stay, I believe that this is how you will benefit. But if you don't, I understand.
So now you have, you not only lose those seniors, but now you lose Tim Thomas as well, right? Your most talented young player. And Villanova isn't really built to lose guys after 1 year, right? Like that's no one was really built that way at that time, but Villanova specifically isn't built for that. For somebody who doesn't understand, can you explain like why that affects a Villanova more than it affected, you know, Duke's lost guys one and done. Even going back then, there was always a couple. I think Corey Maggette was only 1 year, whatever. Why does it affect a Villanova more?
Because you're not really getting McDonald's. You get a McDonald's All-American. Of course you can, but you know, you're not getting them on a regular basis. So you've got to develop guys. And that was the other thing. Losing him, now we were really going to struggle. And not only that, which was probably dumb on my part, I had a schedule where we played Duke home and home that year. We played Kentucky home and home that year. We really had a brutal schedule that year. And it was one of those – how about this? We go 12 and 17, I believe, and we were 8 and 10 in the Big East. I mean, the out-of-conference schedule was ridiculous. So, I mean, we weren't that bad. You know what I mean? It's not like you say 12 and 17. Oh, you must have gone 4 and 14 in the Big East. No, not we went 8 and 10 in the Big East. But, yeah, just losing a guy, you can't replace a guy like that at Villanova and then lose a couple of seniors with him, then it's brutal. If you have a couple, you know, if Alvin and Jason were juniors and Chuck Hornigay, different story. But they all were going at the same time. So you lost four stars. The only starter back was John Celestan. And so it was definitely starting all over completely.
How did the league change affect you? The league at that time, because 95, 96 was my year, and that was the first year Notre Dame, West Virginia. Who else was in it that year?
Rutgers.
Rutgers, because that was Rutgers' kind of first game as well. You know, Miami was always in it. This is before they added Louisville. But how did the league affect you?
You know, I didn't really feel like it did that much. You know, I mean, I didn't think it was the league was always so hard. Now it just got, you know, geographically bigger. And, you know, so I don't think that really had much of an effect. You know, I mean, not that those weren't all good programs. Obviously, you know, you guys at Notre Dame and, you know, Gale Catlett had it going in West Virginia at the time. Rutgers was struggling. But no, I don't think it made a big difference.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, though, because one of the things that helped Jay get it going, and obviously he went to the Final Four with that old Big East, but when this thing really got going was when the Big East changed and went back to basketball only. And 100%. Right, you cut Syracuse out, Louisville out, right? And now all of a sudden, you know, they went from they were a kind of a middling program after his first Final Four to a completely dominant team in the league, which gets you a better seed, which gives you better momentum, which, you know, they were like a high major playing with kind of quasi mid majors a little bit. And I just wonder if in hindsight, you know, there were so many changes at that point in time in the Big East and with recruiting and with how things worked. I'm just wondering now, you know, 20 years later or so, how it looks.
Well, I can tell you this. The best thing that ever happened to Villanova was the new Big East. There's no question. I mean, let's face it. You look at the new Big East. I mean, Villanova was always a good job, but it wasn't the best job in that old Big East. It was a good job, no question. It was a very good job, but it wasn't the best job. All of a sudden, you created a league where Villanova, you look at the teams, you go, you know, Providence, Seton Hall, Georgetown, St. John's, Creighton, Butler, you say, Villanova's the best job in this league. So now that changed everything. And Jay did basically what John Chaney did in the old Atlantic 10, dominate the heck out of the league. And that's what he did. That was the best thing that ever happened to Villanova And I'm not saying Jay, like you said, went to the Final Four in the old Big East. But as far as what really made that thing become what it's become in the last 7 years is this new Big East. You know, think about the schools and think about how this Big East has helped Providence. Ed Cooley's a great coach. He went to five NCAAs in a row. In the history of the school, they've never, Dave Gavitt coached there. They had never gone to five NCAAs in a row ever in the history. Now they go to five NCAAs in a row. Seton Hall, yeah, they had some good years in the old Big East. PJ had some, but now Seton Hall's one of the better teams in the league year in and year out. Yes, it has been told. And those schools in the old Big East, yeah, they'd be good here and there, but not on a regular basis like they are now. Made every.
Well, I think what you're having is, okay, so yeah, this is the great talk. And it's so hard to have with anybody connected to those schools because it's like you're telling them that there's some like phonies or something. Like, no, that's not what we're saying. You got to play in a league that fits you geographically, that fits you in terms of, it's got to be competitive balance to it. And if all things are equal, well, now Seton Hall and Providence can win. But if Seton Hall and Providence are going against Louisville, you know, and Syracuse, remember, like you're pointing out PJ, when PJ had success, it was the old 18 Big East, right? Which is a lot.
Yes.
It's more similar to the one we're seeing now.
True.
Than that gigantic one where you had the football schools and the basketball schools and that gigantic just disparity, really, right?
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when Kevin took the Seton Hall job, their first choice was Fran McCaffrey. And I told Franny, I was like, I think Seton Hall's a better job than Iowa. And he's like, why? And I said, well, because Seton Hall in that Big East, you play Providence twice. You play South Florida twice a year. You play because they would have the big boys play the big boys. And then they'd have everybody else play each other twice. And so you could get 10 Big East wins a year, but not necessarily against the best teams except at home, right? Like you beat Rutgers, you beat South Florida, whatever. So there was some benefits to it, but generally it made it. It's also really hard to get people in your building when South Florida's coming.
Right.
Or when Rutgers was coming and whatever. Now you got schools of all similar size, some similar makeup, and you look at how just about everybody, DePaul's the only team that hadn't really cracked the code. Just about everybody else, and they're not original Big East anyway, has really benefited from the league as it was structured. Now I wonder what UConn does to it, if that kind of throws it out of kilter for a little bit, because UConn is a public school and it does have great history and they feels like it got it going again. But the league thing is an interesting factor.
All right, that's it for part two, I guess, of Steve Lapis. We'll get to part three coming next. Reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can listen daily. It's 3 to 5 Eastern time, noon to 2 Pacific Coast time. And then I do a pod only hour, which honestly, that's got most of the shit that you want in it. It's called In the Bonus. So if you download this, you can download that. Obviously, it's not just about basketball. It's about all sports, but we vamp on things. It's the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can listen to it on the iHeartRadio app or download the podcast where it exists. Tell a friend about this. Lap's the best. You'll love some of the stories in part three. That's upcoming next time. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.